Like,
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Mod State Podcast. And yes, we are back. I'm sure most of you have looked at the title already and said, Moira Ron, Iran. I'm going to say it a couple different ways tonight, I'm sure. However, yes, we are going to talk about this Iranian nuclear deal or framework and the potential consequences of the United States pulling out and just everything around it. So there's a little cognitive dissonance going on in my head as to how to approach this. I mean, we'll be honest. We all knew that Donald Trump was going to pull out of this. This wasn't a surprise. So it was almost like, what was the point of the buildup, man? Like, we knew it was going to happen. So, like I said, no surprise there. And I don't think the point of this podcast is to necessarily look at history and talk about what the deal was. I'm a little more interested in the culture around this deal and what we expect moving forward. It's just curious enough. But before we dive into this, this is the Mod State Podcast, and you're obviously listening to it somewhere, so keep doing so. We are also on the YouTubes. You can find us at the Mod State and YouTube, and you can go to modstate.com for more op-ed and opinion pieces. Check me out on Twitter at modstate_Nate, and of course, there's also the Mod State Twitter handle, which is themodstate, so no surprise there. All right, let's dive into this. All right, what do we know about this thing? So we do know that the preliminary framework agreement was reached in 2015, fairly spearheaded by John Kerry, and it was a. If you look at it, whether you like it or not, and that's kind of what we'll get to at the end, which in the middle of this, which I think is more interesting, whether you liked it or not, it was actually a fairly historic diplomatic agreement. I mean, you have to look and see who was in this. This was the United States, the UK, Russia, France, and China, and Germany, and the European Union. So these deliberations and these this accord, this framework that was created was quite historic. And you know, I think there's a few things we can agree on. And so this is where we'll move into here, which I find fairly interesting. There seems to be, and it bothers me a little bit because I feel from the amount of people that have asked me how I feel about the Iranian nuclear deal or pulling out of it for that fact, I really don't have much to say about it because it is what it is and we are pulled out of it. And the way I look at it is it's this very interesting geopolitical game. In fact, there's a lot of geopolitical games that are going on right now that are very interesting. North Korea being one of them, and maybe we'll get into how this may tie into the North Korean situation. And currently right now, with no surprise, there is a lot of optimism with the North Korean situation. But again, folks, we do military drills with South Korea. I've been part of them. They're awesome joint operations. And you know, North Korea is now considering pulling out from these talks and these high-level talks in South Korea and then the summit with the United States because of these drills. So geopolitics is always happening, and it's interesting that it is very front and center today, especially with Iran and North Korea. So what we do know about this and what the original deal was, and I think what we can do is we can concede, whether you liked it or whether you didn't like it, that there were some problematic aspects to this deal. Though it was a historic diplomatic deal, there were still some holes. And I'm not saying that I necessarily agree or disagree with them. I approach this as it is what it is. And I think sometimes the framework that's put in place allows for an ability to build off that foundation, and we have lost that, but that's me voicing my opinion. So the statement really outlines that Iran enriching capacity will be limited and for a specified duration. And as we know, that there's a sunset clause in this deal that essentially says, I think it's around 2025, that they could sort of resume, presumably resume operations as they had before. So they decided there'll be no more enrichment other than one facility. And I'm not going to pretend to pronounce that. It's like Natnons or something like that. They are allowed to conduct research and development on centrifuges with agreed scope and schedule, which also leads into the implementation of monitoring by the Atomic Committee. And that would be the IAEA. And they would essentially be able to go in and monitor these sites. Now, the problematic part is they weren't allowed, under these provisions, they weren't allowed access or are not allowed access to any military sites, which, I mean, I was in the military. It's your military. There is a level of secrecy that any country would like to have for military operations and aren't just letting anybody in, regardless at a world level. I know a lot of people find issue with that, but you know, I'm not surprised that they did not want that. There were some reprocessing issues there, so the heavy water facility that they had would be redesigned and modernized with no weapon grade plutonium byproducts, and then the spent fuel would be exported. There would be no reprocessing. So these fairly fundamental for any nuclear development program. So the one thing that they actually were able to continue doing was their intercontinental ballistic missile program, which some people found problematic. And again, folks, this is a this is diplomacy. This is a give and take. It's like the deal, right? You know, this country was heavily sanctioned by the United States. And to walk in and say, look, we're willing to give up these sanctions, but you're going to have something equally as intrusive and equally as what they would think would be destructive for their country in place. I mean, that's not really how diplomacy works, and that's not in any way how you would think this deal would actually go down. So this is what leads me, and I'm in no way, shape, or form an apologist for Iran, and I think some people would think that by this podcast I sort of am, but I'm just looking at it from a diplomatic kind of deal level here. So the other things that are going on with Iran that have not been tapped down or have not been addressed with this deal would be the ongoing Iran's ongoing support, although it may be sort of covert or clandestine support of terrorist organizations like Hezbollah in the region. So these are real things, and the money is funneled that direction. And so, again, these are things I'm conceding that are somewhat problematic with the deal. However, it was a deal. It was an accord, and it did stop or has. So the other thing too, which I thought was interesting, was this Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, came out and said they had these documents that showed that Iran had no intention and never had intentions of giving rid of a nuclear weapon. Well, folks, this bit of information wasn't some new information that the Mossad happened to just, in their intelligence agency, happened to just find. This was publicized information from quite a while back. It wasn't necessarily new information. So it's easy to say these things when you can assume that 90% of the public isn't going to do their fact-checking and their bookwork to find out what this really was. And this kind of gets down to my issue with this situation, because when people asked me, hey, Nate, what do you think of the Iranian nuclear deal and Donald Trump pulling out? Well, it's hard for me to say. I mean, I know what it was like before. I know that there were sanctions imposed, and just recently sanctions have been reimposed on the central bank in Iran. So, and also, there has been a call for, well, there will be a move of business out of Iran, and I think there'll be a push to sort of put the squeeze on European countries and businesses that also benefit from business in Iran. So this is the, folks, this is the product of a fairly hawkish Trump administration. And there's really no way around that. I don't care what way or what place you fall on the tribal spectrum that we have in the United States, whether it's conservative, liberal, and progressive. The bottom line is John Bolton is far more hawkish. He has called for regime change in Iran. And regime change in Iran will not happen with a nuclear deal accord. What will happen is squeezing the life out of that regime, and then hopefully the moderate people of Iran will then step up and form a new government. I mean, that would be the easy way to do it. However, there's a lot more clandestine covert stuff that goes behind that or goes in the shadows for that to happen. And that's in Pompeo for what it's worth has also voiced his opinion on a regime change. Now, does a regime change need to happen in Iran? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it'd be great. Just like North Korea needs a regime change. I mean, no one's discounting that. However, I think this is just the climate that we have now, and it's interesting. We'll get into it a little bit. So what I find today is this sort of tribal approach and patterning around people's opinion of the nuclear deal. And from the amount of people that I've talked to, it's fairly, without even talking to anybody, but just knowing where they lie on certain issues or what issues they align with, whether that's, I mean, quite literally, conservative values versus progressive values, that the, and I'm not saying one is worse than the other, I'm just saying I can pretty much guarantee with a reasonable degree of certainty whether you're for the Iranian nuclear deal or you're against it and you're glad that they pulled out. What I ask people then is, why? Why do you feel this way? What is, why do you feel that this deal was poor? Why do you feel that we should stay in? And what I find is that a lot of people, and I'm certainly not, for listeners here, I'm not insulting anyone's intelligence. I'm just saying this is a massively complex deal. And I certainly just outlined some pros and cons for it. But really, it doesn't go much deeper than that for people. And unfortunately, and I'm not accusing listeners of this, this is a fairly, very well-educated audience, far more educated than I am. I just bought a microphone and a hosting website spot. So what it becomes more of a political alignment than it does what may be good in the broader sense for humanity. And I'll kind of outline what I mean by that. But for a lot of people, doing away with Obama-era policy and the legacy that he created for the United States in its place in the world, that is more than fair game for many people in the United States. And I, for one, other than the problematic aspects of the Iranian nuclear deal, Donald Trump also made a campaign promise, and he's been fairly good about upholding his end of the deal for campaign promises, and this was one of them. Part of this has to do with this weird Christian Israeli Zionist type approach to the, I mean, you could see it on Fox News. It was this, people were talking about this being a biblical prophecy coming to light, et cetera, et cetera. John's not really here to defend that if he would. And I know that we all know John's stance on Israel, and I'm again, that's something that's happened recently that we haven't talked about. But there's this, there's a protectionist feel that Iran is a threat to Israel. And I don't doubt that it is. However, biblical prophecies and stuff like that are a little hard for me to chew. It's a fairly well-done steak for me. But nonetheless, it's a viewpoint that people have. So the obliteration of Obama's legacy is one of them. There's this biblical prophecy. And then there's this idea that it's just a horrible deal. And I don't know that it's a horrible deal for the amount of work that went into it. And yes, there were some things that maybe would have been nicer to have. But for me, deals and accords certainly are a foundation to work upon. I don't think that anybody in any of these countries that signed this accord decided to walk away from this and say, well, you know what? Hey, 2025 rolls around. Are we going to give a shit about this? Are you? No? China? You're not going to care? Good. I don't care either. Good job. Whew. Like, I won't be doing this again, and I hope nobody else does. I don't think that that was the point and or the motive and or the idea behind this. Do I trust Iran? No, I don't. Do you think that they're the hardline factions in that country would like nuclear weapons in order to have a more, I would say, what happens when you get a large weapon? You demand a little bit more attention. And that's the case. I mean, that's the case with North Korea as well. So yes, I don't doubt that there are factions that want to do that. However, the foundation that this created, though imperfect, is still a foundation. And that's maybe where I have a little bit more of a problem with it, that we're willing to evacuate and extricate ourselves from this situation. And then people say, well, there's no backup, there's no plan. Where's the plan B? Well, the plan B is what we did before, folks. It's there is a plan B. It is definitely, like I said, tightening the grip on that central bank there and imposing sanctions and not allowing business to go there. And that will hurt Iran. It had in the past and maybe played part of a role in why they were willing to sit down and have these talks in the first place. So we'll go back to that. I think the idea is that there would be a regime change over time if the sanctions were bad enough or they would bow to something else. I'm not entirely sure. So on the left or the progressive side of this say, well, this is everything I just laid out. This is silly. This was a foundation. They seem to be abiding by it. And I realize that it is imperfect. However, it seems silly to move away from this. The second thing that I struggle with a bit, and it's something I've voiced on this podcast before, and that's our place at the leadership table in the world. And I mean, undeniably, the United States holds the head of the table in world leadership. As long as we control the seas with our navy, we will be a dominant force in the world. That's just the way it is. Now, aside from that, not just having the strong arm of something like that and the greatest military in the world, which does demand a bit of attention, we do need leadership and diplomacy to back that up. So what we're finding, or what I feel we do that hurts more than anything with this deal, is our willingness to walk away from it. Now, some people see that as a sign of strength and that we're willing to walk away from a shitty deal and not settle. Now, I see that. I get it. However, I look at it from the context of the way other countries see that. I mean, we have a very limited view of this strong move. It's a campaign promise. It's like, we've done this. We're going to stick it to them. We're the not the bully, that's not the right word, but we're controlling things. So I look at it a little differently. I say there is a perspective in the world that the United States post-World War II has held a leadership position in the world. And part of that leadership position is diplomacy. And it is trying to find the best situation for everybody and being willing to listen to others. And what makes America great will then consequently make our allies great as well, and then those people that want to be allies great as well. So there's this fostering of, I guess it's more of a humanitarian outlook. I'm not saying that strictly and literally as humanitarian, but I think it's like a collective global, it's a global collective. I mean, we're all in this together, one for all for one kind of thing, which is completely unrealistic. I get that. I'm sure there's a lot of people like, dude, you really? No, I totally get this, but I don't understand why that's not something we could actually strive for. And I think something like this deal does that more than it does walking away from it. And there are leaders that are now looking to the United States and realizing that, hey, I feel that there's a bit of a vacuum here. There was this stable leadership force that was present. And I'll just say it was present under 8 years of Obama, whether people want to agree with me or not, that things have definitely changed. And the climate, the way in which other countries perceive the United States has changed also. And I know people can look to North Korea and say, well, look, this tactic has worked. Kim Jong-un is willing to come to the table. Yeah, I'm not giving Obama credit for that. I have to give, for everything that I know, I have to give Trump credit for that. And maybe his sort of his unconventional ways and his maybe inconsistencies can lead to a country like North Korea saying, I'm not really sure what this guy's going to do, so maybe we'll cave or we'll talk about this. I don't know if that's true or not, but there definitely is a shift. There is a far more hawkish administration, like the John Boltons and the Pompeos, that were in the past. So what I'm looking at and the way I approach this deal is looking at specifically Europe and what Europe sort of thinks in this entire thing. I mean, the United States was the strongest player in this deal, and you know their best batter just left, and this is where even today Iran and their envoy there was, they were in Europe, and they were trying to figure out what we can do to keep this deal alive. And Macron came out and said that he wants to keep the deal alive. But, you know, I think Reuters posted something and they said, look, there are no guarantees, but, you know, they're going to do everything they can. So, you know, you lose a big player like that and it becomes, there's this void, right? And some people, like I said, like the void. They like the America first attitude. They like this defiant, if it sucks for us, we're out kind of situation. But again, I just kind of look at diplomacy and said, I don't think it really sucked for us. I think business was allowed to go and operate there. And it is what it was. I mean, there was a lot of work that went into it. So there's one other thing I was going to say on this. Oh, so this is the other thing that kind of comes up. And they say, someone might say, the proverbial they, would say, well, now when it looks like America doesn't hold their end of the deal, or they're just willing to walk out of any deal at any time, that doesn't really instill confidence in a leader that's willing to come to the table with the United States, i.e. North Korea. And, you know, I think with Donald Trump's unconventional leadership style, I don't know that many countries may be looking at this as if the United States just backs out of deals. I think, for lack of a better word, he's a little crazy when it comes to his foreign policy. And that's maybe disingenuous, but John's not here. So, but no, what I do feel is, other than the unconventional leadership style or the idea of being beholden to deals or not, what I think is you see countries like China, and who have a Xi Jinping who is essentially consolidating power slowly. And someone like him can look, and this is, you know, other than him, China being part of this accord, you know, like, why would we bring up China? Well, here we have a leader who essentially is consolidating power so he can essentially run the country for the rest of his life. Whether it's a move towards dictatorship or what, that's not the point. The point is that this individual can look and say, all I have to do is play the long game. That's all I have to do, because this president's going to come in and undo every diplomatic thing that the prior president did, or a lot of things that the prior president did. And you know what? He's gone in 4 years. And listen, if he's back, he's only back for another 4 years. So what? He's got 6 more years. I just got to hold out. That's all. Let him be crazy. Let him do whatever. I can't take him serious. And I don't have to. I don't have to take this man serious. There's, when you create a foundation and then overturn or crumble the foundation after several years, you know, you're starting from scratch again. It's not like, it's not as if we're just picking up where we left off. We're starting from scratch, and you know, it's going to take a while for these sanctions to take effect. And then, you know, we pulled out of this deal, and look, all the business that we've been doing that we couldn't do in Iran for the last 3 years, the business we could do in Iran for the last 3 years, we got what, 3 more years of not doing business, even though they're probably going to do business, folks. And then new president comes in and lifts sanctions or tries to adopt a new deal, and we're back in. Like, it's this weird up and down. And that's what I think troubles me more with these very other dominant world leaders who aren't held to the same democratic standard that the United States is. And I know a lot of people will look at me and say, you know, who cares what they think? And I think maybe you're right, but it is what it is. I don't know how many times I have to say that in this podcast, but you know, the tea's good. It just is a bit troublesome to me on that geopolitical level, that we're in and out of these things, and that at some point this administration will be gone, and we'll be, again, rebuilding with whatever new administration feels is the right thing to do in that region. It doesn't bode well for stability in that region. And maybe, to be honest with you, maybe there's a lot of people that find that instability in that region actually mitigates a regional power player like Iran or Saudi Arabia, and that's the way we should do it. And we've made mention of that in these podcasts before about Iran and Iraq being buffers against one another, and that's the way it was for many years. And there's efficacy to that in not having a dominant, stable power there. I think the dominant, stable power there will not be like a Turkey, even though that's kind of moving away from the secular Turkey that it was. There will never be a secular power there, a secular democratic power there. It will always be some sort of religious faction there. And maybe it's better to have a bit of instability there. However, I think overall the goal should be to move to a stable region, because a stable region then hopefully adopts a better civil rights track record and better values for their society. And that's something, maybe it's a pipe dream, but hey, one can dream, can't he? So, you know, that's kind of where I'm at right now, running up on 30 minutes of just rambling. And annoyance maybe, but this is my take on the Iranian nuclear deal. I'm obviously not really settled one way or another. I think this isn't something that I can be settled on one way or another. It's hard for me to say, yeah, the deal's great, but it's also hard for me to say, yeah, we made the right deal by moving out and pulling out of that, because I think it doesn't do much for the Iranian people, and you know, it doesn't do much for the move of capital over borders from an economic standpoint. But you know what? I have been surprised before, and I will allow myself to be surprised again. And this is when I'm just sort of sitting back and having my tea and popping some popcorn and just seeing what happens. So certainly on the horizon, we've got this potential North Korea summit that's coming up. That's interesting. And then, of course, the embassy moving from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem and declaring Jerusalem the rightful capital of Israel. We'll see how that pans out over the next few days. Hopefully there will be no more bloodshed there, because regardless if you're pro-Israel or if you're pro-Palestinian, the fact that lives were lost on a day when they didn't need to be is problematic. But That's neither here nor there. That's another podcast. So, until next time, folks.
Au revoir.
We'll see you.